We are one nation under God. We shed our blood, bend our hearts. We know exactly who we are. America, we are America. We work hard.
Hello, everybody. Happy Saturday. Hi, Ash.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Oh, I'm good.
Yeah.
It's, you know, World War III outside, but.
It is outside. It is. Mm-hmm. But it's not inside.
It's not in here. It's not World War III in here.
I know. I feel like it's been World War III on the brink for many, many years now.
Yeah, that's true. So today, after announcing that they were going to fire rockets or missiles or whatever, Iran did, in fact, follow through and fire said rockets and missiles, and then announced that they were done. Said, we're not going to do it anymore. We did it in response to Article, I think it was Article 51 of the UN Charter, and now we're done with that. And you know, nobody should respond, because if you respond again, then it's going to be worse. But
they were getting it out of their system.
Yeah,
yeah, that's the weirdest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah. Yeah, we have a lot. We have a lot of fun stuff to talk about. It doesn't surprise me or really even bother me all that much that these governments are shooting missiles at each other. What bothers me is the response and reaction of the people that I see. American people, not American people. It makes me a little bit sad. But we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about Trump's speech. Trump spoke today. It was a bit fiery, but mostly peaceful. So I took some notes on that. We can talk about a few of the fun things that he said. And then I think we want to talk a little bit about the eclipse as well. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we get too far into it, you guys, please hit the thumb or the like or whatever. Oh, you know what? Hold on one second. I'll add us to YouTube just for fun. As long as it's World War III, we might as well. Unless, are we going to be talking about whatever? Okay. Hit the thumb, you guys. And we have a new sponsor, and this is just so cute. Now I got to scroll up. Welcome to the adventures of Bay and Breezy and the second book in the series, Lost in the Zoo. Author Ashley Reynolds Nelly and illustrator Sarah Webster Smith are two patriot gals from Texas who need everyone's help of making the bestseller list. Their captivating storytelling and enchanting illustrations make this series a must-have for every young reader. Immerse your child in the whimsical world of Bay and Breezy, where each page is a treasure trove of imagination. Emphasizing the importance of nap time and the joy of dreaming, Lost in the Zoo makes for an engaging read-aloud for young children and an amazingly relatable story for dog owners of all ages. The Adventures of Bay and Breezy is a series of children's books inspired by and illustrating the real life of two fun-loving, often mischievous, biological Dudley Labrador sisters living in Houston, Texas. Badlanders, the book business is a racket rigged for the elite and celebrity authors. Let's band together and push this wholesome book to the top of the bestsellers list. Pre-order your copy today at badlandsmedia.tv/labs and support this amazing patriot team. That's badlandsmedia.tv/labs. It's so cute. It is really, really hard to find any entertainment, period, for kids that isn't woke or, you know, pushed by the elite, all of that stuff. It's really hard to find books that are, you know, you can find some older books, but like finding newer stories is really hard to that isn't full of terrible stuff.
Yeah, I totally agree. And they look adorable.
Yes.
I want to read their stories. Rogue 12 says Black Lives Matter.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do.
Oh, I love dogs, and I love a good dog story. Everybody help help push that book up.
Yes, absolutely. All right. Should we talk about some Benson Honey Farms real fast?
Absolutely, we should.
All righty.
Badlanders love Benson Honey Farms. It's true. We really do.
Yep.
Indulge in the authentic, unpasteurized, 100% natural honey, a product of diligent bees working the fields of wildflowers. It's as raw and robust as the spirit of Badlands. When you're seeking a taste that's real, pure, and American, choose Benson Honey Farms, the sweetness born and bred in the heart of Nebraska. Are you craving something sweet? Benson's honey-infused candies capture the essence of Nebraska. Each bite, a delightful taste of home. The barbecue sauce is pretty amazing as well. And don't forget the goat's milk honey soap. I had cucumber melon of the Benson Honey Farm soap, and it was amazing. I need to get more.
Yum.
Benson Honey Farms is a celebration of the America First spirit, a symbol of the resilience of our homeland, embodying the spirit of Badlands. Their family-run operation is a reminder that the true flavor of America lies in its heartland. Benson Honey Farms, proudly American, naturally delicious. Visit badlandsmedia.tv/honey. That's badlandsmedia.tv/honey.
Awesome. All right. So what are we talking about first? You want to talk about...
Let's talk about the eclipse first.
Okay. Yeah, that's fun.
It's more fun than World War III. Are we going to get World War III out of the way?
Although they are... Well, yeah, that's true. Yeah, let's save the eclipse for later. Let's talk about the war, even though they are related.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So the video that I was thinking about before we came on air is 34 minutes long. So we're not going to play that. But I am going to drop it in the chat for folks. And it talks about, it's this pastor guy. I don't know if he describes himself as a prophet, but he talks about prophecy and prophecy coming true throughout history. And basically, kind of to sum up in this 34-minute video, the eclipse has generally been a bad omen, and wars and earthquakes and famines and, you know, all sorts of horrible things come in the wake of an eclipse. I saw another video of this guy. It was a TikTok video. So, you know, you have like the floating head in front of the background picture, and I clipped part of it because he shows that like an earthquake breaks, basically the mountains collapse. His theory was that like the plates are sitting on each other like this, and the pull of the moon of the eclipse happening, the pull was going to release the plates. And everything was going to collapse in. And it was, you know, silly and funny. And the picture was hilarious. So I posted it a whole bunch of times, often in response to people's eclipse posts. I would post that picture. But he was also talking about how throughout history, there's bad, you know, things that happen in the wakes of eclipses. And then, as we said before the show, neither one of us is capable of having really a deep conversation about this topic, but the eclipse in Aries is causing lots of bad woo-woo feelings. Anyway, all of that to say that Iran bombed Israel today.
Right. Right. Well, you know, we might as well talk about the eclipse. Bad things happening after eclipses. There are eclipses like every year, right? There are like a couple eclipses every year. It's not like they're...
Yeah. The thing about these eclipses is that they make it their path. So they're in kind of tandem with each other. The one in 2017 and the one in 2024. Apparently like in the early 2000s, there were the same paths of two eclipses kind of in tandem with each other in Turkey, and they made exactly the same pass, and they're like X marks the spot kind of paths. And so it's, you know, signs and wonders in the sky kind of thing. Science says you're crazy to think that it's anything other than the moon passing in front of the sun, which happens all the time.
Right. Well, I mean, it kind of would make sense in my mind as somebody who is really stupid when it comes to our solar system and how it works, because I'm completely baffled. It is 100% impossible. but that, you know, if things are rotating and moving and whatever, that they would kind of crisscross like this, and that there would have to be, I mean, I guess, you know, the fact that it happened over land, I don't know. But all I know is that every time there's an eclipse, every time there's something like this, people are, number one, talking about all the bad stuff that's going to come. And number two, talking about how heavy the energy is and how they're tired and things like that. I've heard, excuse me, a lot of people talking about that. But I also think that those are just the times that we're living in, and maybe where our attention isn't being drawn to it all the time. But when something like this happens, like if somebody else says to you, gosh, I've been yawning all day, I don't, you know, is it the eclipse or whatever? And then
I'm,
you're
getting
like,
on.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that means you're not a sociopath.
Okay, good.
Yes.
That's happy to hear it.
That's how you test to see if somebody's a sociopath. You yawn in front of them, and if they don't yawn, then they're a sociopath.
Good trick. Glad to know it. I'm looking for this video now because it gets into, you're talking about the paths, and the video that I'm thinking about, not the 34-minute one, this one was like, I think, 6 minutes. Mm. But it talks about how the paths that we see of eclipses that like NASA shows us is, first of all, it's on a globe map, right? So do with that what you will. But it also is on a very condensed timeline. And if you were to continue tracing the path of the sun and the moon the way, you know, like over a longer period of time, you would get the kind of sacred geometry kind of Mendelbrock kind of pattern stuff. And the video is pretty cool. I'm going to see if I can find it.
Yeah. I love sacred geometry. That it's very fascinating. And it's everywhere. It's everywhere in obviously in nature. We find it, but also old cathedrals and, you know, the windows and a lot of the ornamentation, you'll find the sacred geometry for whatever reason. A friend of mine had this, what was it? It was a table that was lit from underneath, but it had sand on the top of it. And then it was glass over the top of that. But it was like a marble that just moved around in there. And I don't know what was causing the marble to move, but it would make these sacred geometry things. You know, there are also the pendulums that you can do with the sand, and they'll kind of, you know, you set it loose and then it will just start to kind of create the flower of life or whatever it is. So,
So what it shows in the video is that, but it's like, I think he's showing maybe it's Mercury and Venus, and they're kind of when they are in their orbit together and, you know, they spin together, however they do, that it makes that flower of life. This, pull in my screen. This is the video that I'm looking for. Somebody in our chat knows exactly what I'm talking about. If you could find it, drop the link in the chat. Because I only have the screen grab. I don't have the video. I mean,
that says it all right there.
Yeah. So you can see like the mountains have collapsed into the sea there.
Okay. So, I mean, as somebody that grew up in California, they've been talking about the big one forever, literally. And the big one was always going to come. And every time there was an earthquake, they would remind you that there are such things as pre-shocks and that, you know, this earthquake might just be, I mean, it really is no way to live. It's no way to live your life being like, it could happen at any moment. And this is the way that I feel like everybody is living their lives. We are in a state of trauma where we all have PTSD and we are looking at the world through that PTSD. And we are looking for signs and omens. And this is not a healthy way to live. It's not a healthy way to live to be like, even if you are excited for, let's say, some kind of rapture or whatever it is that you think is going to happen when shit really hits the fan, even if you're excited for the afterwards, it's so important to just live your life. Like whatever is going to happen is going to happen. And in a way, I do believe there is something to us creating our reality with our consciousness and that we do have an impact on our surroundings. And so when we are I mean, like you had mentioned before the show, and we were talking, people cheering for war right now, yeah. Right? Which we'll talk about in a second. But that kind of, you know, when they start telling us that World War III is just around the corner, which by the way, they said when Trump ran the first time that we would be in World War III as soon as he got into office. That never happened. So they're always finding new ways that we're going to get sucked into World War III. And so that is what is in the conscious mind of the people. It's not good. It's not healthy.
And that was certainly what we saw today. I was not really paying attention at all to the news or social media. I was watching the last of the Jason Bourne movies this morning. And then, which is just so full of programming. It's impossible to watch, you know, regular movies now. Anyway, so the movie ended and I'm like, oh, let's check in, see what's going on Twitter. And it was like World War III, Tel Aviv, Israel, U.S. Air Force, because there was reports, I don't know if they're true or not, but that there was reports that U.S. Air Force jets were intercepting Iranian drones. I have no idea if that's true.
Where?
Over Tel Aviv, I imagine. Oh, okay. Or, you know, in between Iran and Tel Aviv. But it was all war. Like the entire trend list was war. And clicking on any one of those tags, particularly Israel or World War III or Jerusalem was trending for a while. Clicking on any of those was just a scroll of people cheering for war. And it broke my heart because, you know, there's a lot of there are so many factions of this conflict, even among, you know, people who are on the right side, you know, right, meaning like right side of the aisle, not like we're right, but like right side of the aisle, who, you know, are critical of Israel. Even that faction has so many different splinter factions within it. And I think that the moments like this, October 7th was another one, and we get them a lot having nothing to do with Israel and Palestine or Iran. We get moments a lot where it almost feels like a test for the condition of your heart. Like, are you able to be swept up into an emotional response about something where you're now attacking your countrymen, right? Or your neighbor, your family members, verbally attacking, not, you know, physically attacking, but you're now on opposite sides and ready to go to battle with your family because of an emotional reaction that you're having to something on the screen.
Yeah.
And we see a lot of it. It's like, we keep feeling that test, man. Every time one of these things happens, it's emotional. Emotional vomit on both sides.
Yeah. And another thing that is sick to me is that when something like this happens, you know, like you said, you go to Twitter and you're, you know, it's all a buzz with whatever and the hashtags. There are literally people, even on our side of the movement, who do this as a living, right? They have made, or they, maybe they're, whatever they're doing, maybe they just have a big account on Twitter that literally salivate thinking, oh yeah, this is going to, you know, I can talk about this. This is going to get a lot of clicks. This is going to get a lot of attention. They're thirsting after it and they chase it and they don't stop to think, what am I contributing to? You know, there are even times, I mean, at this point, those people that are paying attention like that have to know as well as we do that most of this stuff that everyone's all frantic and frenzied about doesn't end up panning out or doesn't end up being what everybody says it was. Remember when everyone was like, put your phone in the microwave on this particular date and because it's going to fry your brain and turn us into zombies and they're, you know,
yeah, I'm not doing that.
They're going to do it.
I'm way too addicted to my phone.
Yeah. Bring it on, whatever. What's a little zombiness if I can still play Candy Crush on the toilet? So, there's such a toxic environment right now with even some people that we look up to as far as chasing after these things. I mean, I don't look up to them, but I'm talking, you know who I'm talking about, like people that are usually the clickbait and the, you know, content thieves or whatever that are just, they will perpetuate these kinds of things. This is who we are, have lent our brains to. This is who we hand our brains over to every time we go onto social media and we tune into this stuff and we've got to know what's going on in the world. Like, we tell ourselves that if we don't know what's going on in the world, then we aren't informed. And that is true. But at the same time, we also know that so much that is going on is probably literally designed to be traumatizing us, harming us, getting us to turn on each other, getting us to have those reactions like you were just talking about, where it's like everybody's in fight or flight mode. Yes.
It's certainly the whole point of the propaganda, right? Yeah. Of the all out, because what you're describing of, you know, oh, this is something I can write about, this is something that I can do content about, this is going to get me clips. That is the media's mm-hmm. posture, right? The legacy media's posture towards war. Oh my gosh, we got to get people in the ground, you know, on there on the ground. We've got to get the humanitarian angle. We've got to pull in this. We've got to do that. And you're advertising war. You're marketing it. And then we've lost the ability to trust that we're getting any sort of objective storytelling. We're mm-hmm. getting the story of the war of whoever pays the bill at that network.
Yeah. The that song by Don Henley, "The Dirty Laundry," is such a great depiction of what the media is actually like. Just absolutely sickly turning towards all of the disgusting things in the world and highlighting it and delivering it to you with a smile, because they know people can't turn their eyes away from that stuff. Yeah. And it literally is, you know, they manipulate us through it, but they also use us and I don't know, siphon our energy from it. Certainly there are people that make money, and we tune in, we want to see it. It's like the cliche thing of having to look at a car crash. There's something sick about us literally that needs to know about all of the horrible stuff and go through the doom scrolling and panic and you know, talk about how this is surely a sign of bad things to come. And we, you know, listen to all the weird stuff that might be prophesied. I mean, a lot of prophecies come true and a lot of prophecies don't. And a lot of things, you know, happen out of nowhere. And a lot of people say, oh, I could have seen that coming. It's kind of like when our earth, our planet, our society, all of these things are in flux always. Mm. There is a tide to everything. Part of why I think that this community formed, you know, it's not that we're smarter than the people that haven't woken up yet, because there are some very highly intelligent people somehow that aren't seeing through this stuff yet. And I think it's not so much about intelligence, it's about pattern recognition. And so when you get really good at recognizing patterns, somebody might call you psychic, because you'll be able to predict things before they happen. It's not that you're psychic, it's that you are seeing the pattern. And I mean, how long have we been saying, gosh, this week has been crazy, this week has been nuts, there's been so much going on this week? That's just the state of the world that we live in. One, it's always been kind of crazy like that. But two, we're all paying attention way more than we ever, ever did. And there are more sources of information. We're not all watching the nightly news and reading the newspaper to find out what's going on in the world. We can literally get on social media and see everything that's happening all around the planet at the same time.
Yeah. So I think you're spot on about, you know, we're all paying attention more than ever before. I think so. Has your son gotten to the age where he has to know everything? Like, if you're on the phone with somebody and you're like gasp or something, it's what is it? What's wrong? Like that, you know, I think there's something in us, because all of my kids are all super different, but they all had that. I had it when I was pregnant. I tried real hard not to know the sex. I couldn't do it. I had to know because other people knew.
Yeah.
Right. So I had to know. I think there's something in us about that. And I think that the bad guys know it. Mm-hmm. Right. I think one of the things that we, you know, the people who try to be moral, I think one of the things that we do is we try to fix the aspects of human nature that we find distasteful. And I think the bad guys recognize that there are aspects of human nature and exploit them. So when it comes to information, In the 80s and 90s, we had headline news. And it was generally news. It wasn't terrible. It was CNN's headline news was a program. Mm-hmm. Ran on a 30-minute loop. And you'd get all the news that you needed. You could get yourself informed with a 30-minute download. And you're out the door and you are informed. It's all pretty much headlines. And whoever writes the headline. So that was a, I think, multi-decade op to do it, along with a whole bunch of other things to degrade the attention span and to make it so to really get people to believe and conditioned that they can understand what's going on. They can have that connection point. They can get that part of that human nature itch scratched with the headlines from an authoritative source. At the same time, we had the 24-hour news cycle come up and reality television and real-time internet all the time, you know, fully accessible commercial internet. Then we got the supercomputers in our hands and then there's social media and all of the things. Mm-hmm. And we're bombarded with messages all of the time and from 2 decades of having shorter attention spans to begin with. So not really able to consume and process it all. So a lot of people shut out. A lot of people go rabbit hole. A lot of people still trust the news. But that's the environment that we're in as, you know, we're getting messages of war. That, you know, there's now Iran has entered the chat and they're not afraid to shoot off missiles, which just for the record, they were afraid to shoot off missiles when President Trump was in charge.
Absolutely. Well, there's one piece of that I think you left out as far as all of these things that are conditioning. And I think that because I wonder, has humanity always been like that? Have we always been kind of sick in the head as far as needing to know all the terrible things? Or is it partially because we have been traumatized at a young age, all of us in different ways, shapes, and forms, but you know, some of the same, like if you grew up in California, you were literally traumatized by earthquakes because, like I said, they always talked about how the big one was coming. Entertainment, you know, movies started getting scarier, and then they started putting out movies like Tremors and Twister and things with natural disasters, making these things you would literally watch. You know, CGI of entire towns getting swallowed up and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. That does something to you as a person. And then also Disney and movies just started getting scarier and entertainment started getting like more gnarly.
Disney movies were always terrifying.
That's right. That is true. My dad, you know, but my dad wouldn't let me watch Disney because he was traumatized by it when he was a kid. Yeah. So he knew, but like.
Always a dead parent.
Always a dead parent.
Also, I do think there's a little bit more biology to it, right? And that's why I asked about your son, because all of my sons had that too. I think there's like the anthropological, there, you know about the threats kind of thing, right? Like know mm-hmm. what's going on. And I think and it's probably both, right? There's nature and nurture in most modern constructs, but I think that there's a biological aspect and it's kind of all over the place because we don't have community anymore, right? Like we don't have the strong community where we can trust that somebody else is looking out for those threats. So we kind of have this internal anxiety that's biological that we don't really know what to do with because we're told that we're super safe.
Yeah. Yeah, it's important to establish your community, get to know your neighbors. It is getting acclimated into your own surroundings is one of the ways in which we can fight off anxiety. That was something that my therapist that I saw years and years ago told me that, you know, when an animal falls out of a tree and lands on the ground or something, you know, something smacks it or whatever, they always shake off. That is them feeling their weight in their surroundings and kind of, you know, whatever. And she told me when I was about to have a panic attack to look around the room and take notice of, you know, all of the details. And it somehow pulls you back because I've had panic attacks before. They're awful. And it would pull you back into your surroundings. But yeah, getting to know your neighbors is a really important thing, I think. And to kind of, I don't know, stave off the anxiety that is just this world. But then also at the same time, we live in a crazy world. There is always terrible stuff happening. We have learned about horrific things that happen in this world. But at the same time, when we look back on our lives and think about all the times that we were scared, all the times that they put the fear of God in us, you know, Y2K and whatever, mm-hmm. all of these times that it was surely going to be the end, or it was surely going to be just as terrible as you think, it never was. Yeah. It never was. Even the big C word that we went through, which was awful, and it sucked when it was going through it. But what did we really, we learned more than we suffered. We, it wasn't, you know,
nobody went without their, by the way, it took me a second to figure out what C word was.
Oh, oh,
I
realized yeah,
we're on YouTube. I was thinking like the C, see you next Tuesday. Like what? Yeah.
No, not that one.
What did I miss?
We're on YouTube. So, but the, you know, nobody went without their medications. Nobody went hungry, you know, things ended up being okay. Never going back to doing that. Nobody is ever going back to doing that. We learned a lot, but it's always kind of been fine. I think about this in my life, you know, every time I'm suffering through something and really nervous about what's to come and feeling that awful, disgusting feeling. And I've been through some stuff in my life, but I got over all of it. Mm-hmm. And there were so many times that I worried about things that never ended up happening. And it's like the premonition of things and the worrying about things is always worse than what actually ends up happening.
Well, yeah, it consumes you. And I think that's the point of, because as you're, you know, as you're describing all of the things, right, all of the things over the years, in, I'll be 45 in June. So in 45 years, all of the terrible, horrible things, and then all of the things before that, that my parents were terrified with, right? And that gets us into the nuclear fallout and the Manhattan Project. Fear is so useful. It's so useful to control the population. It's so useful to be able to radically move the Overton window. To you know, that's the C word taught us that. There were a lot of see you next Tuesdays when we were going through the C word. Let's just put it that way.
They all showed them the C words came out.
The C words came out during the C word time. Yeah. Season of C's. Yeah, no, because it was what was acceptable. What was acceptable for equal access and equal rights to certain services and you know, stores and things. What was acceptable for the governments to do to people in the U.S. and outside of the U.S. It was way worse outside of the U.S. What was determined to be acceptable for governments to do to people in the name of a public health crisis, what was acceptable for employers to do to their employees, the ways that they were allowed to track them all of a sudden, the types of data that they were able to collect, all of that was deemed okay. It's acceptable. We're going to throw out HIPAA. Mm-hmm. That's out the window because public health emergency. It's very, very useful to people who...
The girl that works at Sephora gets to know whether or not you're vaccinated.
Yeah. And that was all okay because public health emergency, and it was only okay, not because there was a public health emergency, but because they had sufficiently terrified people that it was necessary. And we know it wasn't necessary. None of that was necessary. In hindsight, they've all admitted that none of that was necessary and they lost their mind. Of course, that doesn't really hold up when you look at the fact that they've, you know, been planning since, you know, there's I'm trying to be careful now. I'm like super aware of the fact that we're on YouTube.
So dumb.
But like the thought leadership papers of the, you know, world's biggest brains were talking about something like the C word going back to at least 2011. And other major think tanks were talking about it being a top priority for the majority, 51% majority of CEOs in 2015. So why was everybody so caught off guard? Why was it that people didn't know what to do? There was a major event that happened a month before that whole shenanigans kicked off in earnest, the C word shenanigans, that implies they really shouldn't have been all that caught off guard because they had a freaking dress rehearsal.
Yeah, right?
But, well, it's what we're meant to believe.
It is. So, I mean, knowing this now, and I think most of us realize that we are being, you know, there are mechanisms of control that are definitely using fear tactics, and we can start to spot them now, and we can look back on our lives. We can even see it all around us in the programming of TV and news and all that. So now what do we do about it? You know, because my inclination has been to pull back from paying attention to this stuff. Cause I'm like, it doesn't matter. You know, like, it's not that it doesn't matter what goes on in the world. Of course, if people are being bombed, that matters, but what can I do about it? And me living in a heightened state of fear, you know, I've fallen for it way too many times and it has exhausted me. And so I'm to the point now where I'm more interested in focusing on the things I can control. And, but it, you know, it comes at the price of like literally not being able to pay attention to this stuff. So there's got to be another way.
Yeah. Well, I think that my approach, because I can't really disconnect from it.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I'm not wired about that. Second of all, I do multiple news shows.
Right.
Exactly. But I think that making sure that my response to whatever's happening, whatever the stimulus is based in truth and based in a earnest pursuit of what the facts are and showing empathy, because I think we have a real risk of losing our humanity a bit when we're propagandized all the time. It's very easy to be like, I'm just not going to look. I don't care. I don't. And I think that worked. I think that's certainly where I was in kind of my orientation to all the world's bad stuff,
mm-hmm.
prior to really waking up to the realities of the sex trafficking trade. Then I went through a mourning process of how could I have been so cold and, you know, callous to all of these children and all of the, you know, so I think to me, it's really important that we keep our humanity. We stay human. I think that that's, a predictive programming thing too that comes through, I don't know, The Walking Dead and Westworld and all those shows. A big part of that is humanity and stimulus and how you can have your empathy and your humanity eroded away. I think it's all we're going through such an op. We have another sponsor, which I think we should play.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I wanted to say that Lincoln Hawk Martin said, fenbendazole kills the C word. And I think you and I need a new code because we have too many C words.
So many C words. All right, let's watch this.
Investigating covert CIA operations, investigating the CIA in general, is now off limits to the press, unless you have what Ted Turner called proof beyond a reasonable doubt, which when you're talking about covert operations, you're never going to find as a journalist.
Conspiracy theorists, kooks, crackpots.
You take on the intelligence community, they have six ways from Sunday at getting back at you.
We don't engage in assassinations and kidnappings and things of that kind. As far as I know, we never have.
One third of my staff in this task force was covert action, was propagandist.
Honestly, Twitter or X now is really where I get like all my news.
The unholy alliance between the intelligence community, social media platforms, and legacy media outlets.
And we will have to summon the same capacity to adapt to new circumstances and to meet changing times while upholding timeless ideals.
Fake, disgusting news.
It's one of those pieces of what we've seen around January 6th that is pushed by people that want to suggest that this attack was something other than what it really was.
This is why so many people can't stand the mainstream media and why there's a hardcore animosity towards the media that is pretty much commensurate or equivalent to the animosity towards Congress.
Was that your laptop?
For real, I don't know.
You mean the laptop is now another Russia hoax?
And that's exactly what
this way you're
exactly
going.
What
this is
going.
Where he's going. The laptop all right. is Russia, yeah. Russia,
gentlemen,
Russia.
I want to stay on the issue of rape.
We have an army of digital soldiers. This was irregular warfare at its finest.
Fuck you. War.
I'm excited for everyone to see that. We're going to be premiering it at GART. So that'll be exciting. Get your virtual tickets, guys, and you'll be able to watch that along with us.
Yeah, so I was a little bit excited because you hear Andy Breitbart in there saying that the media's the people's animosity towards the media is the same as Congress. Today, in Pennsylvania, when President Trump was speaking, he said, the media is less popular than Congress, which is quite the accomplishment because nobody likes Congress.
Exactly. Exactly.
Like the only people that think Congress is doing a good job are the lobbyists and the corporations who are paid by Congress.
Yeah, I think it's just not as in everyone's face. Now it's so obvious, you know, that we're being lied to every single day that you've got a lot more people feeling it for that, but I think everybody pretty much hates Congress too.
Yeah. I mean, obviously they're awful. All right. So, all right. Do you want to talk? I'm trying to think of how much Trump stuff I captured. So I thought when I sent you a video clip in, Telegram, that is on the election. President Trump was, he was pretty amped up. He was on it. He came out and said, you know, we have to pray for the people of Israel. They're being bombed right now. He's 43 minutes late taking the stage. So, you know, who knows? Who knows what he was doing? He talked a lot about energy. China's building a coal plant. We here have windmills. And he said that windmills are great bird sanctuaries or bird cemeteries, rather. Bird cemeteries. Ranted about electric vehicles as he does, went really hard at energy. Of course, he's in Pennsylvania, coal country. So playing to the audience there, talked about the border and how I love it when he does like the role play, you know, he's like, oh, we have to let these wonderful people into our country. These wonderful people are from insane asylums. There's a lot of that. I just love Trump so much.
Me too.
He makes the horrors seem solvable. And of course he did solve quite a few of the horrors. They've been reignited under this administration, but
he does have a calming effect on me for sure. It just feels like there's an adult in the room.
Yeah, I'm trying to see. I don't.
You know, you brought up the electric vehicles. I was actually just talking to a friend of mine that's was a firefighter, and he was telling me about how firefighters have to be trained especially for these electric vehicles because when they catch fire, you can't put them out with the normal water or foam. Like, you have to go in and disconnect them. They're, like, super gnarly.
Nice.
So just the things that we don't – the things that we don't think about, and they were like, advancements in technology. Yes, let's just go with that. And then it comes along with all of these problems.
Yeah, it's just so it's sold to the public at large as fighting climate change, and it's your duty to have an electric vehicle. Then there's people like our audience that would never do that, right? We're not going to buy electric vehicles for the environment. So they're cool and fast. And then you want them because they're cool and fast. But it can go 0 to 60 in like negative 10 seconds. And now we're, you know, you get another stakeholder group on board with centralizing mobility and inextricably linking it to the electric grid. It's a freaking terrible idea. I don't support the industry. The batteries rely upon child labor and blood diamonds and strip mining. The environmentalists pushing for a solution that relies on strip mining. It reminds me of banning paper bags to save the trees and replacing them with single-use plastics.
Yeah.
Which are the worst, according to my Superfund governor here in Colorado. Single-use plastics, the greatest pollutant that we have in the state of Colorado. It's clogging the rivers. It's, you know, all over. They're, I don't know. If we had sea turtles, they'd be strangled by them. And that was an environmentalist in the in the tank with plastic lobby, but that was solving the tree thing.
It's also like in California, they don't let you cut back your shrubs, the brush from your property. You're not allowed to cut back the brush. And then that's always what is the kindling for these wildfires that happen almost every year, or literally every year. And you know, the environmentalists, which is so much worse than cutting things back. So you have to wonder, are they really that stupid, or are they just being paid to create destruction?
I think it's both.
Yeah.
And I think it's a matter of level, because the environmental activists. So I went to both boarding school and college in the West, and I was already pretty radicalized because of the chlorofluorocarbons and the ozone layer that my sixth grade teacher had pounded into our heads. We were going to be responsible for killing the world if we kept using Aquanet. And so by the time I went out into the West, it was all conservationism. And I believe that conservationism is a very good thing.
Yeah.
We should be good stewards of the earth. And what I learned from, you know, a lot of my professors and you know, teachers and advisors were staunch conservationists, who, like, I love that hydroelectric power is an environmentalist solution to energy, because hydroelectric power, according to conservationists, destroys the river ecosystem and may make certain species extinct. They have to flood beautiful places and all of those ecosystems and all of that wildlife to be able to build dams like Hoover Dam or Glen Canyon Dam. So within the, you know, it's, so again, I think people that want to conserve the earth and do the right thing, I think that can be weaponized.
Yeah.
Just like our desire to protect the children can be weaponized. Our desire to preserve our liberty can be weaponized for some bad stuff. And I think that for environmentalists, that's true. But when you get to the levels where you've got, you know, the fully national or multinational NGOs driving climate policy in the name of the UN, then it's the latter.
Well, free energy exists and has for a very long time. And we know.
And the third strike on YouTube just came.
Well,
that's Kate, John.
That's Kate. Sorry. Let's go out with a blaze of glory. But you know, so it's not even they're not even truly trying to save anything, because that's truly the way to have a clean, unobstructive source of energy that isn't going to harm anything. My dad was telling me about cars that could run on water and cars that could run on alcohol when I was a kid. And, you know, people will build prototypes and then they'll go missing or they'll die in like a really weird way. And so it's an industry, just like everything else. The environmentalists, they are, it's an industry, and it's an industry being run by psychopaths. Although they're, like you said, of course we need to preserve, we only have one planet.
Yeah.
As far as I know, we only have one planet to live on. We don't want it dirty and disgusting and dying. We want it healthy and thriving. And people used to be able to create even beautiful cities in areas where it wasn't, you know, where it was beautiful and it blended in and it worked along with the natural environment. And now we've gotten away from that completely. And it's just mow it over, throw some concrete, throw some just ugly, you know, cinder blocks. It's all so ugly. And there's no excuse for it. It doesn't have to be like that.
Well, demoralization is the excuse.
Exactly. But you're so right, you know, because this is the joining of the people, right? I remember when I went to my first kind of hippie conference and there were kids walking around with bare feet and tie-dyed shirts and MAGA hats. And I was like, what is happening? We both kind of have to learn from each other and realize that the stigma that we have towards some of the other people's beliefs comes not from the actual belief itself, but from the propaganda and the evil agendas behind those things, like environmentalism or women's rights, right? What happened with women's rights? They got completely turned into the feminist movement, which is an evil agenda. So we associate people that are for women's rights or women's empowerment, and we automatically want to roll our eyes and like pantomime, you know, naughty things. I know I do, but then at the same time, like, I'm for women's empowerment. Like, I am a recipient of the, you know, I like having equal freedoms and the right to vote.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I it's probably going to piss off a bunch of people in our chat, but I don't care. I believe it is harder for women to accomplish certain things in this world than it is for men. Even though we have equal rights, women are built differently. We have been sold this bill of goods that we can be the CEO and also have a family, right? You can be the Pinterest mom who makes all of the things and, you know, has the bento box lunch with all of the perfect caloric everything. You're, you know,
shaped like a panda bear, all of the fruit.
Yeah. You can have the bake sale with the best, you know, goods that take into account everybody's allergies. You can volunteer for every field trip and every classroom thing, and also have a meaningful career that you can excel in to the top. You can't, ladies. You can have some blend of that. You can certainly have a career and a family. You can have a meaningful career and meaningful time with your family. You can't be perfect at both, because being perfect at one of them requires giving almost all of your energy to it. If you want to be the CEO, then you're probably not going to make it to every one of your kids' practices, right? And that's a lie that women have been told. As a result of that, it's much more difficult for women. I know women who put all of that on hold, decided later in life after they had made partner to become, you know, moms. And then they're, you know, in their 40s with an infant and a toddler and, you know, staring down all of that and having to maintain. Because once you get there, to the level of whatever level you're climbing to, you don't just get to stay there. You have to maintain it. You have to continue to perform. You have to meet your numbers. You have to bring in new business. You have to do all of those things. And you can't do both. I learned it the hard way. I believed it. I thought I could do both. I was pretty good at it. I was pretty good at balancing. I had a stay-at-home husband. That helped. That came with it. It's whole other
right
set of challenges. And we've been so lied to. And it's like, you know, now the big trend out there is the whole, you know, patriarchy trad woman thing, where, you know, women in our generation are being kind of smacked down and slandered for believing that lie to begin with. And, you know, we got there because our moms actually had to fight for equality, right? I mean, my mom was passed over for a job because the dude that she was up with, you know, up against in the job had was getting ready to get married. And because he was going to have to provide for family and she wasn't, because she was a woman, she didn't need the job as much. Whether or not she was the right fit for the job was irrelevant.
my grandmother, she worked during World War II when all of the women were called up. And then she went back in and raised her four kids, went back into the home and raised the four kids when the duty was over, right? When it was okay, women go back. It's not wrong to want equality. It's not wrong to try and make the world just for minorities, for people who have a harder shot. But when that gets weaponized, and when your empathy then gets used against you to condone and tolerate really horrible stuff, actual discrimination and bigotry, a lowering of standards such that the company is hurt by it, the nation is hurt by it, our culture and society is hurt by it, then the brave thing to do is stand up and you know, try to push back on it. But I think you still have to keep your humanity and your empathy intact. And I think that's very difficult because it's like we're being poked in the face all the freaking time.
Yeah, I mean, they're selling us a bill of goods every step of the way. And we do fall for it. I fell for kind of the opposite. Not fell for what was in my heart. Like I had a career. I was a hypnotherapist and I was damn good at it. Mm-hmm. And I gave that up to support my husband and to have a baby. And because that's what I felt called to do is like, yes, I love being a hypnotherapist and I'm good at it. It feels good when you find something that you're actually good at. Mm-hmm. And you feel like you're helping people. I knew I was helping people. But I gave it up so easily because I was like, I want the family. I want, mm-hmm. you know, I don't want to miss a minute with my kid. Mm-hmm. You know, now I am a divorced single mom who has to work and make a way, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so you never know what's going to happen in life. And it's unfortunate because it should be that way, right? It should be that everybody has their role. I remember one of my friends telling me one time, nobody can do everything. That's why plumbers exist. Because I was telling him, you know, my sister is one of these people who does it all. She changes her own oil. She does her own taxes. She's like, I mean, she can do it all. And so being her little sister was, you know, I was the one that was called, Mom, Dad, I have a flat tire. What do I do? You know, so we were completely night and day in that way. And, you know, so I was telling my friend about this a long time ago and he was like, well, you're not supposed to do everything. Mm-hmm. This is why we have people that specialize in certain things, whatever. But to have those equal roles that are equal but different so that nobody, like if you marry somebody who brings the exact same things to the table that you do, that's a mess. That's boring. Yeah. Then you get competitive with each other and all the other things that you guys aren't good at aren't getting done. Like you need somebody that's going to be nurturing and take care of the kids and you need a breadwinner, whatever. There are a bunch of different roles. But, you know, the rub is that in order for that to work, because you have two parts that are equal but leaning on each other, that one of them better not back out. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? In order for a partnership to actually work, there has to be trust and there has to be like, you know, a good foundation. And the other thing that we are, you know, that generations, our generation, and as it gets younger, it gets even worse, that they are being sold that, you know, you can just have multiple partners. You can go out and just, you know, sow your oats and date a bunch of people. And, you know, you don't have to commit to anybody. You don't have to get married. And, you know, if something is broken, you just throw it away. You don't try to fix it. And so this is why we have a society of miserable people who feel like, oh, well, I can do it all. They're running themselves ragged because it's an unnatural way to be living. Nobody's supposed to do it alone. We're supposed to, you know, lean on our family members and we're supposed to have close friends. We're supposed to know our neighbors. We're supposed to have a partner. And everybody's just trying to do everything alone.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, in terms of why people are miserable, I think it's a big contributor. I think the isolation is largely intentional. And I think, again, going back to, well, we didn't really focus on this, but technology's role in degrading community, right? Mm. Because we're living in an age now where you don't have to leave your house. You can have your groceries delivered. You can have your church service online. You can have meaningful, deep conversations with people that you call friends that you've never looked at in the face, and you only communicate with them through a device. And you can call that living, right? Your clothes can be delivered. Your furniture can be delivered. But we're missing so much. And it's like a lot of other things sold in the name of convenience. Yeah. You know, and I think also so much of this has happened so fast. The transformation of our society. We lived in a radically different society 20 years ago.
Yeah.
In 2004, the year that my oldest son was born, we lived in a radically different society. The iPad came out, I think, a couple years later. Or maybe it was the iPhone that came out a couple years later.
Yeah.
I'm forgetting, but that was, you know, a significant change. And I remember my husband and I talking about that, like when, you know, the supercomputer, the screens with, you know, where there wasn't a keyboard anymore. It was like, now you're just holding a screen, right? Like that whole thing. I remember my husband and I talking about that when, you know, like, what is this going to be like for our kids? Because when that came out, you know, we had infants. 2004, yeah. Tara says iPhone was 2004. So yeah. So I think it was like a few years later that the iPad came out. And I remember a picture of one of my, it probably wasn't my oldest, because I think the iPad was like maybe 2008. I think it was later. So he wouldn't have been the infant. I had, you know, a steady stream of them for a little while. but I had one picture of one of them laying just in a diaper, laying on their stomach, touching the screen. The iPad was kind of propped up and, you know, touching the screen. And I remember my husband and I talking about, like, wow, like they're going to grow up so different. In a lot of ways, they grew up the same, right? I mean, like, humans and American culture and all of that is the same, but the role of technology is profound. Yeah. And I think it's been really beneficial and really wonderful in a lot of ways, but I think it's also doing harm that we can't even comprehend. And we can comprehend some of it. If you look at, like, you know, Elon making the lame walk and the blind see, I think that's an evil I can comprehend. Anybody with that power is going to be bowed down to as a god.
Wait, what? He made the what?
That's the promise of Neuralink, is that people are going to be, disabled people are going to be able to walk again. You know, blind people could be able to see and all of that. So,
gotcha.
Yeah. One more thing Trump said that I kind of felt like giving myself a pat on the back for. So since Afghanistan, I've talked about how I think they're moving troops. I think they're moving troops inside the interior of our country. It's, you know, you see what's happening at the northern border with the Chinese nationals, the 16 million people at the southern border, the Afghan withdrawal where they prioritized planes of military age males and moved them all over. President Trump said tonight when he was talking about the border, he said, "Do you think they're building a small army inside of our country?" And I said, "Well, yes, Mr. President, I do. And I've been saying it for years."
I don't think it's so small anymore, but but yeah, these are the things that have us watching the news with bated breath. When is it going to kick off? We've got all these cells, around, like, you know, around our country. We've just waiting to go, just waiting for their goat order, and then.
Yeah, I'm watching Alpha's series with Colonel Towner right now, and she said on Operation Gladio, which is stay behind units that basically the, you know, cabal and intelligence community, whatever. This goes back. I've been reading the book Operation Gladio for a while, but I took a break from it to listen to the podcast because I just need the narrator of the audiobook. I'm listening to the book. The narrator sounds like Howard Cosell reading the news.
I don't know who that is, but I feel like.
And then they moved into the third theater and it was good. And they saw that they wanted, like, that's the whole book. So I had to take a break, take a break from it. And so I'm watching I think I'm on like the fourth one. There's 8 parts, I think. And I'm on the fourth part. And Colonel Towner talks about how once you see how to interpret the moves of the intelligence community as it pertains to Gladio and the way that they're able to manipulate, you know, policies and activities and whatnot within a country, you see it everywhere. Mm. And I really do. She's not wrong. It's like when you look at, so I was watching, like I said, the Bourne movies today, and in the beginning of the Jason Bourne, the, pretty sure it's Jason Bourne, the fourth movie in the series, one of the characters goes into an internet cafe and you hear, things over, it's like subtitles. You hear people talking in foreign languages and it's subtitles. And it says, use SQL to corrupt their databases. And I'm like, well, that's interesting, because that's what happened in Mesa County and Antrim County and, probably Williamson, Tennessee and whatnot with our elections. And then like the very next scene, you're in Langley and they're like, a device just popped up that's tied back to one of our stay behind units from the 1990s in Russia. And I'm like, and the stay behind units is like the whole kind of premise of Gladio. And I'm like, holy crap. Like, it's just so in our face all the time. The other thing that I came to realize, and then I'll shut up, is that every spy movie, so all the Jack Ryans, the Jason Bournes, I watched another one called Safe House, which was Ryan Reynolds and I think it was Morgan Freeman, if I'm not mistaken. No, Denzel. It was Ryan Reynolds and Denzel. I watched one of the other movies I watched was Denzel. But every single one of them, this genre, kind of spy thriller genre, is the freaking agency is corrupt. And there's good people that have to take down the very top, you know, the tippy top head of the snake. And it's like, All right. So yeah, like they've been just telling us all along.
Yeah. Did they tell us that stuff for whatever reason? Because, you know, to alleviate their karma, or did they tell us that stuff? Because then if you uncover something like this and you go and you try to tell people about it, someone's going to be like, you idiot. That was in this movie in 2001. You know what I mean?
That didn't work for E. Jean Carroll. Because that's what E. Jean Carroll did.
That's right.
Called her. Actually, a lot of people called her out on it, but it didn't matter at the end of the day.
Oh. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right. So why don't we end on kind of more of a fun note? I have this. I found the video. It is, he is Dakala Day, dead_hidden on TikTok. And it's a 10-minute video, and I'm not going to play the whole thing, but I pulled up, this is the part where he's talking about the paths. So I thought we could play this part.
Right. Isn't that Justin Deschamps? Be honest.
Just kind of look like Justin's mustache is superior.
And now look at this map of past eclipses and the paths that they make on the face of the Earth. Those two plates colliding is what caused the mountain.
Okay, can you hear? Okay.
Mountain ranges to form there to begin with, and when they slips under, it'll release that tension. It's that easy. Y'all think the topography is fixed? How do you think it got that way? I cannot say that this is going to happen anytime soon after April 8th, only that it absolutely looks inevitable at some point in the future. I mean, just look at this map real quick, though. Then look at that for a moment. And now look at this map of past eclipses and the paths that they make on the face of the Earth constantly. And now let's put them on a flat Earth map just to see that that is the start of a geometric pattern like unto, I want to be clear, a geometric pattern of gravitational and magnetic paths that the sun and moon take above the face of the Earth, such as this one that the Earth and Venus make in 8 complete orbits. And hold on 1 second. It doesn't matter if the Earth is orbiting the sun or the sun is orbiting the Earth. This is the pattern. And this is what that's going to look like here. And I'm sorry, flat earthers, there is no flat Earth animation that I can find of this right here, but it doesn't matter.
This is so cool to me.
If you look underneath the animation, you see the Earth and Venus in 8 orbits. You see Mars and Venus in 7 orbits beside it. And to the right of that is Saturn and Jupiter in 7 orbits. Underneath, that's Uranus and Saturn in 7 orbits. You can see these patterns that are made here. This is sacred geometry, but it's much more than that. Now, these intricate dances that the celestial bodies and the earth and the sun and the moon all participate in with the stars are not just patterns of movement. They are patterns of movement involving forces like gravity and magnetism, or whatever you prefer to call them. I don't care at this point. These are all just labels we put in our own little understandings of stuff and how it works. Is relativity wrong, chock full of errors? Yeah, of course it is. Einstein was a dirt monkey. His brain was made of dirt. But we do the best we can here with what we have to work with. But science says the forces of the planets and the sun and the moon affect the Earth. We know that the stars do also. Muons and neutrinos, I mean, from the stars, bombarding the Earth by the billions and billions and billions every moment of every day, all the time. Don't be surprised if Mario jumps a level. Neutrino hit the switches and turned a 1 to a 0, and he just jumped level in an apparent glitch. It's recorded. Go look it up. It is no coincidence that our technology is based on this 369, as told by Nikola Tesla. This sacred geometry can be seen on every level because it is intricate to how the universe itself functions on every level. Forces and gravity and magnetism and such, if you need it mundane. It's not mundane. These are celestial heavenly bodies. Bible says the sun rules over the day and the moon and the stars rule over the night and divide the light from the darkness. And that means more than you think it does. And it really does show on every level. Look at how that one resembles that solar eclipse map we were just getting started on. The only reason this is not a complete and super impressive geometric pattern right here is because it's too small of a span of time in the recordings. You put enough time and recordings in here and it's a full thing. The sun and the moon, the lunar and the solar eclipses would make a pattern just like this if they were fully recorded. It's just that their pattern traces out over a much longer period of time. This one's just not done yet. It really is just Russian nesting dolls on every level.
All right. So I think that so all of those spirographs that we're looking at are allegedly the path that is drawn when two celestial bodies, it's the path that's drawn from their orbit, right? Like their combined orbit. That can't be an accident. That's not just something random. It's gorgeous and stunning. And we're so infinitesimally small.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know enough to know whether or not that's weird. You know what I mean? It's like remember the spirograph things that you would get? You'd put the pen in it and it was like the plastic ring would go in, and you're just like, if there are two fixed things and they're going around and around, they're going to create a pattern. But I don't know. And yeah, we see these patterns in water. We see these patterns in snowflakes. We see these patterns in plants, everything. So there is, you know, yeah, that the Nikola Tesla 369 thing. I'm sad that he's not behind me anymore. I have a portrait of him that's like just off screen. And every single show I ever did, somebody like, who is that? but I don't know. I mean, it's fascinating, and it could be just so simple and I'm just overthinking it, but my brain just won't compute some of these things. But I absolutely agree that most of our science is just, they're just beliefs. They are agreed upon beliefs. Yes. And so the people that look down their nose at people that are religious as if that somehow means you have relinquished your brain matter to something else. Everything is based on beliefs. Before we even get started in life, we formulate beliefs before we formulate thoughts. If we believed that our mother's milk was poisonous, we would have died. It comes from trust and belief first, and then you start to formulate. All of your opinions are based off of beliefs, even science. So. That's my rant.
Yeah, I want to show, I think this is probably a good, so this is sand, and everybody's probably seen this, but I think it's a good follow on kind of from what you just said.
Yeah.
And you can do this with water too.
By the way, that's alchemy.
Thank you. So anyway, I could watch it all day. And like with water too. I was trying to pull up another one on water, but my computer's being an asshole. So
no. A friend of mine, Alara, did a presentation on semiotics at this conference that we both spoke at. And it was she was actually, the presentation was about making the scientific case for God. And it was a really, really cool presentation, but she did all that stuff. While I was watching that, I was thinking to myself, you know, we're watching vibration move all of these things in line and kind of conform to these figures. And it kind of reminds me of what we were talking about in the beginning of the show with them using fear. Fear is a frequency to get us in line and to make us conform. And, you know, because there were, I was, what made me think of that was there are little grains of sand that don't quite make it into it. You know, mm-hmm. It's not perfectly uniform. There are those little rebellious grains.
That's a great point.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a great point. Because there totally are. But I, you know, I was thinking more about, we know that if Venus and Mars are in orbit together, you know, the pattern that their orbit, their collective orbit traces is a pattern that we see show up throughout nature. We're told that that pattern's being drawn by, you know, the heliocentricity of it all. However, you know, we can see similar things come up through energy and frequency. And I'm of the mind when it comes to the heliocentricity of it all. I don't think it holds up, but I won't say, you know, what that I believe the earth is one certain shape over the other, or that the forces in our world are one way or the other, because I think it's unbelievable freaking hubris to claim that you can know that. I think we're so deceived. I think we've been lied to so much. I think I know, you know, there are things that I can see with my eyes. Don't always trust what I'm seeing with my eyes, because a lot of that's been manipulated as well, right? There are people that say they absolutely know what's going on in that war right now because of what they saw on the screen. No, you don't.
Right.
And so that to me is the it says in the Bible that the heavens declare his glory and that the rocks will cry out. If man ceases to praise God, the rocks will cry out and praise him, because you can't look at nature, look at the creation, look at how beautiful it is, look at how complex we are, right? All of our systems and processes, and how do we work, and all of, you know, all of the creation. I just can't, it's not an accident. You can't get there with the Big Bang, man. It doesn't hold up for me.
No, it doesn't make any sense to me either.
Yeah.
Well, guys. Yeah.
It's almost deep-ish time. I think we had a rumble ramp.
Yes, we do. Let me pull that up really fast.
You do that and I'll check over on Boosts and see if we had any boosts.
Okay. It is from our friend Carrie Prejean. Two of my favorite ladies / commentators on Badlands Media. Thanks for your insight and commentary. Looking forward to seeing you in GART for next week. Yeah, 4 days from now or something, right? Or five days, 6 days. Yeah, 6 days when it starts.
I fly in on Thursday. So what is that, 4 days?
Yeah, that's, I don't know, 4 days.
Today doesn't count. Today's over.
Yeah, today's over. So excited about that and seeing everybody there. And get your virtual tickets if you have not done that yet. And what you got going on Culture of Change tomorrow.
Okay, and just for the record, I see no boosts.
Okay.
So everybody, please hit the thumb, because that really will help us out quite a bit. We would appreciate it very, very much. I can't remember what we're talking about tomorrow. Tomorrow's going to be a live show, and it's been a while since we've done recorded shows for like the past couple, and then next weekend is recorded. Next weekend, during GART weekend, we have Chad Stewart coming back to talk about the latest with the Britfield movie and the fourth book and all sorts of cool stuff, talking about
the Britfield series. So that's exciting. And I have your book, your Britfield book as well.
Though. Oh, awesome. Cool.
But yeah, we recorded that a couple of weeks ago. So we'll have that show for everybody on Culture of Change next weekend. And we'll have a live show for you tomorrow. I just can't remember what it's about.
Well, awesome. Awesome, guys. Well, I'll see you at whenever the next show I do is. It will be the Kate Awakening on Monday night. Is going to be my second show for that. Really, really excited about that. And it feels very good to be back doing that show. So please join me for that. Monday at 9 p.m. Eastern is when that will start, right before Baseless Conspiracies. So
yeah, all right, guys. That's awesome. Well, I loved the first one.
Thank you. It was, it felt good. All right. I'll see you guys later.
All right. I'll see you guys in the DPH chat. Have a good night, guys, and enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Bye.
Lord knows I've tried to paint that town every shade of red. There's a lot of whiskey bottles and skeletons. I broke more hearts than the strings of my guitars. But one was gold and damn sure wouldn't bend. She saw her baby in the crazy, her child in the wild. She brought me in this world and kept me here. 5'5", full of grace, full of pride. She saw me coming a mile away. So far from heaven, no chance I would get it. She didn't see me that way. Oh, the devil only knows the sinner I would be. But mama raised the hell out of me. Yeah, mama raised the hell right out of me. Curly phone cable, leaving tears on the table, saying, what did my boy do this time? Yeah, she could have hung up or gave up, said she was fed up, but she looked up and prayed to Jesus to hold her eye. Yeah, that devil downstairs sure tried hard to get me there, but he didn't stand a chance against. 5'5", full of grace, full of pride. She saw me coming a mile away. So far from heaven, no chance I would get it. She didn't see me that way. Oh, the devil only knows the sinner I would be. But mama raised the hell out of me. Yeah, mama raised the hell right out of me. She saw her baby in the crazy, her child in the wild. She brought me in this world and kept me here. 5'5", full of grace, full of pride. She saw me coming a mile away. So far from heaven, no chance I would get it. She didn't see me that way. Oh, the devil only knows the sinner I would be. But mama raised the hell out of me. Yeah, mama raised the hell right out of me. Me.